Looking for hope? House of Possibilities offers children and adults with disabilities a path to greater independence. From social to recreational programs to overnight respite and career and community access opportunities, House of Possibilities is changing the way people see disabilities and their program participants see themselves. Visit houseofpossibilities.org to learn more or to support their work. That's houseofpossibilities.org. House of Possibilities. See what belonging can do.
B-Pod Studios.
This is WWE Superstar Roman Reigns, and you are listening to Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast with James Stewart and Mike Riley, two great members of the Kowloon crew. Mike, remember, this is Jay Stu's yard, brother.
Mike Riley, November 7th, 2020, this Saturday night, for most people who are listening, All Elite Wrestling will present their second ever Full Gear pay-per-view event. On paper, I like a lot of these matches. I'm not really sure if I'm going to order this thing and watch it live on Saturday night, or if I'm going to watch it Sunday morning on the most illegal stream of streams that I can find. A part of me still feels, and here's why, a part of me still feels burned by the last AEW pay-per-view, and I understand that's really unfair of me to judge All Elite Wrestling's pay-per-views and their quality based on one bad one out of the eight that we've seen. But, you know, the humidity, it could be humid in Jacksonville. You never know. And even if Roman Reigns and Jey Uso is still, in my opinion, the most interesting and number one story in wrestling, I did want to lead with the AEW pay-per-view, Mike. So I'll start with you. What match from this show coming up on Saturday night are you most looking forward to?
Jimmy, I may be in the minority here on this one.
You usually are.
Well, but you know what? I am excited to see the return of Matt Hardy. And I just think that, you know, a near career-ending match on Labor Day weekend, usually are, give me a break. I think that, what about my 1990s list? Anyways, Matt Hardy there. I'm so excited to have him return here. And I really hope, James, that this match would be a pre-recorded one for the safety of Matt Hardy in his return here, where, again, Tony Khan, I still take issue to it, how that match at the Labor Day weekend continued after that really should have been done. So I really hope it's pre-recorded for the safety of him here, where this may not be his last ever match inside a ring. Sammy Guevara, though, for the sake of him, I think that's really important for him here in this spot going up against Matt Hardy, where Matt obviously has that connection with him. He feels comfortable with him. But I think this will probably be the last time these two fight. And just for the importance of Matt Hardy to show that he can come back from a near career-ending injury and to see what he can do to put on the line with his unbelievable athleticism, I'm really looking forward to this one.
I have to think that this is going to be the last time we see Matt Hardy and Sammy Guevara fight. Yep. I'm interested in if this is going to be like the ultimate deletion, if this is going to be like, because Matt Hardy's done these deletion matches with his brother Jeff. He's done it with Bray Wyatt. So my assumption is that it's going to be a mini movie. And yes, if it's creatively driven by Matt Hardy, it's going to be really good. And I see Sammy Guevara winning this matchup because Matt Hardy, I think, has a run at the top, but I don't know necessarily that Matt Hardy wants a run at the top, and I don't know anything about that.
Yeah.
But I think as long as Matt Hardy is getting paid and as long as Matt Hardy is having his creative juices satisfied, I think we're good here. And I think that's a main reason why Matt Hardy left WWE for AEW. But yep, I do think that when they do this mini movie, and again, I'm assuming it's going to be a mini movie.
Yeah,
they're going to be a lot safer than they were in that last match.
Yeah,
like, that's just an assumption on that.
Yeah, yeah. I think Matt's going to win. I really do. I think that's going to be his defining match right here, you know, for the Elite Deletion, Ultimate Deletion, whatever you want to call it. And the fact that he can show that he came back from that near career ending injury, he'll get the victory on this one here. But Guevara and him to work together, I think we're in for a treat. Should be a good one.
Yeah, and hopefully there's no issues, because they could have been on pace for a really good match the last show, but Matt had his injury. They went to the finish, and we went over that at length.
Yes,
on the last one, and and thankfully Matt Hardy's healthy, and they get to do another match. And
yep,
looking for hope. House of Possibilities offers children and adults with disabilities a path to greater independence. From social to recreational programs to overnight respite and career and community access opportunities, House of Possibilities is changing the way people see disabilities and their program participants see themselves. Visit houseofpossibilities.org to learn more or to support their work. That's houseofpossibilities.org. House of Possibilities. See what belonging can do.
Roto-Rooter.
Plumbing problem? No match for a little DIY duct tape. Oops, hold on. Nope. There we go. No match for a little... Ah, dang it. Wait. Duct tape and a wrench. Leaks are no match for duct tape than a wrench. And a bucket and a towel. More duct tape, a hammer. This random tube I found in the basement. Another bucket. More tape. A little more tape. Perfect.
Ah! On second thought, maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
And away go troubles down the drain.
To go from there. Mike, the match that I am most interested in is Chris Jericho versus MJF.
Mm-hmm.
And the stipulation is if MJF wins, he's allowed to join the inner circle. I am all in on Chris Jericho. And I think Chris Jericho is going to win this match. And he, to me, is still the most must-watch guy on the AEW roster for me. I think Jericho wins, but I think MJF ends up with the inner circle. And I don't really have a good reason to feel that way, other than it feels like Jericho is going to turn full-fledged good guy, full-fledged babyface, and it still keeps MJF with the hatred, heat, and despite the fact that he's lost two straight pay-per-views to two WWF guys. I don't know how Jericho wins, but I feel like Jericho wins because I think Jericho's been on he lost to Orange Cassidy. He lost the Stadium Stampede. He lost the title. Like, Jericho's due a pay-per-view win.
Yeah.
And MJF's still young and he can get that win back. And but you don't want to beat MJF twice. I guess I'm kind of torn, and that's a good thing.
Yes.
Is that if in my mind, I'm like, this is a pick'em. But Jericho wins, but MJF gets the inner circle because the inner circle is going to turn on Jericho. Something along those lines, I feel like, is going to happen with this. But I'm intrigued with the matchup because Jericho can work with anybody. The promos, I think, have been wonderful. They did a mini political debate on AEW, which I thought was wonderful. It's always nice to see Eric Bischoff there, you know, and having the voice of my childhood, Tony Schiavone, be one of the moderators is tremendous.
Yep.
So I just think that this is going to be a really good match. I think it'll be the best singles match on the card. And I see Chris Jericho pulling off a victory.
Could, you know what? On paper right now, I mean, here we are toward the end of the year, could be a candidate for match of the year. We'll see at this time next week. And, you know, like I mentioned last week here on the show, I have a little hard time trying to figure out who is the heel in this one. And MJF, he just says that he's the top heel in all of pro wrestling. And to your point where you could see Jericho make that babyface turn, more or less, it makes sense. He's well-liked by a lot of people. Last year at this time, he was in charge of he still is in charge of the inner circle, but he was going around like, you know, the toughest group around and just so much where like an NWO sort of thing, just badass everything. And it doesn't have that same feel now. And again, maybe it's because of with the lack of audience and so forth, but MJF here, I question, does he need the inner circle? I think MJF can be fine on his own. Would it be cool to see him take over the inner circle? I mean, I think they're thinking outside the box, trying to get creative, yeah. But I don't think he needs the inner circle. He can be fine and Jericho could win this one here, no problem taking him down. But if that's the case, if MJF goes inner circle, I think that's great. If he does lose and stay on his own, that's a win-win situation. He is that damn good of a wrestler.
I think there are some times where you need a circus around you. Like, I think Cody needs a circus around him. I think that certain things work out better when you have a circus around you. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm kind of intrigued. I'm very intrigued with what MJF could do with multiple people around him.
Yep.
Because he was the sidekick, the protege of Cody. He had Wardlow, has Wardlow as his bodyguard. So it helps, especially when you have somebody as such a good talker as MJF is, to play off of somebody else. You look at The Miz.
Yep.
The Miz's best work is when he's had somebody to play off of.
Mm-hmm.
Damian Sandow, Mizdow. Yep. You know, this run with Morrison has been pretty good. Who is that guy who was with him that John Cena hated?
Oh, Riley. Riley.
Yes, Riley.
Alex Riley.
Alex Riley.
Yep.
Good memory there.
Well, you know, and he spells it the same way. That's the unfortunate part.
That's the cousin of yours. So Miz plays off better with other people.
Yep.
His interactions with Daniel Bryan when they were doing the student teacher thing. So I think MJF I think he plays better with others.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say he can't be a single star on his own, but I think he plays better with others in the same way that Cody does or some of the other names that we mentioned.
Yep.
I want to transition to...
Looking for hope? House of Possibilities offers children and adults with disabilities a path to greater independence. From social to recreational programs to overnight respite and career and community access opportunities, House of Possibilities is changing the way people see disabilities and their program participants see themselves. Visit houseofpossibilities.org to learn more or to support their work. That's houseofpossibilities.org. House of Possibilities. See what belonging can do.
Roto-Rooter. Plumbing problem? No match for a little DIY duct tape. Shoot, hold on. Nope. There we go. No match for a little... dang it, wait. Duct tape and a wrench. Leaks are no match for duct tape than a wrench. And a bucket and a towel, more duct tape, a hammer, this random tool I found in the basement, another bucket, more tape, a little more tape. Perfect.
On second thought, maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
And away go troubles down the drain.
A match that I'm looking forward to.
Yep.
That has a similar dynamic in, I don't know who the good guy is and who the bad guy is. And that's FTR against the Young Bucks for the AEW Tag Team Championship. And if the Young Bucks lose, the stipulation is they will never challenge for the AEW World Tag Team Championship again. And we saw this stipulation a year ago when it was Cody challenging Chris Jericho. Cody lost. And he has not challenged for the AEW championship since.
Right.
The Young Bucks have to win this matchup. And I think they will win this matchup. And if the Young Bucks are the great tag team that the internet thinks they are, they have to beat FTR here. This has been an internet dream match for a lot of years. And on the bigger picture, we can't have Cody and the Young Bucks not be able to be in championship matchups for their own companies. I mean, Cody at least was a snake in that he created a championship for himself, but I still think at some point he's going to be the AEW world champion.
Mm-hmm.
But transitioning, who are the good guys and who are the bad guys? And the reason why I ask this is FTR are supposed to be the bad guys. And they have Tully Blanchard, but the Young Bucks have this attitude of F you, we're the best tag team in the world, and they have an edge, and they super kicked the voice of my childhood, Tony Schiavone.
Oh, terrible.
And they're throwing money at Tony Khan because they're getting fined for doing things that are unprofessional. So, and as somebody who personally sends a lot of mixed messages in life, the Young Bucks are kind of sending a mixed signal onto which side they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they're edgy good guys.
Yep.
But I'm not sure of that. And the other example is, and I think we mentioned this on previous episodes.
Yep.
The AEW tag team title match against Kenny Omega and Adam Page from February of this year, where they showed that cocky, arrogant, do whatever it takes to win, and the crowd booed them during the match. So I think that the Young Bucks are at their most effective when they are doing that style, when they are doing that type of matchup. So I think the Young Bucks win here. I think they have to win here. And I think this is going to be your match of the night.
So on the flip side, yeah, I think it's going to be a really good match. And the flip side of that here is the tag team belts were just put on FTR not too long ago. So that's something to consider here as well. Is it too early to take the titles off of FTR? And, you know, it looks as though that, yeah, the Young Bucks are in prime position to finally get that win right here, that championship they have never had as one of the foundations of AEW. And still, like you said, they haven't had it yet, and they do need something. But I could totally see FTR winning this, Jimmy, and I think they are going to retain. I think FTR will hold on to the titles here. And yeah, the Young Bucks will still have that stipulation that they can never challenge for it again. It just gives you that whole sense of when could they possibly get it back? Because yes, it is still in the back there of Cody to get the AEW World Heavyweight title, even though that stipulation's on the line for him. He cannot challenge. It gives you a possibility to tell everyone that the Young Bucks could get it back there and get that opportunity to break the rule there, or just have something in writing that they will have that opportunity to get a championship and have a chase for it. So I think FTR is going to win. Young Bucks will be on the chase again here on the hunt. And I think it will be a good match, but you know what? I think the right move overall would be the Young Bucks to win, but I think they're going FTR here to hold on to it and tell us another time for the Young Bucks with a large audience in a studio or a stadium, wherever they're at, large audience in hand for them to win in front of everyone.
Mike, do you think the Young Bucks like being VPs?
You know, if they're getting paid, sure. Right? I don't think they care if they're being a champion. If they like being vice presidents, absolutely. Wouldn't you say so?
Here's why I asked the question is, like a month or so ago,
yep.
Eddie McCabe?
Oh, yeah.
On the New Age Insiders YouTube channel. I guess they're just doing YouTube stuff now.
Yep.
They're our friends. We love them. He asked this question because he just was looking at body language.
Yeah.
And he noticed that, and I hope I'm accurately portraying this.
Yep.
He noticed that they looked like they were having more fun doing being the elite than they were in the ring during the Wednesday night show.
Okay.
And he theorized that they don't look very thrilled about being vice presidents.
Oh, really?
That was his theory. I don't think it was, it didn't feel like it was like a belief. It was just a kind of a look. It was just kind of a feeling. So that's why I asked the question. Because just because you're getting paid a lot of money to do something doesn't necessarily mean that you love it or necessarily believe in it. But somebody has decided that you are the proper person for this position. And you take the position thinking, okay, like I'll do this and I'll have control over this. But then you realize that you're responsible for a whole bunch of other things that really don't interest you or really don't want to, you really don't want to take up your time, or you get to the spot and you realize the spot isn't what you think.
Right.
And so maybe part of that, Maybe the thinking is that if the Young Bucks don't want to be the tag team champions,
uh-huh.
they don't want to be featured prominently in their own promotion because they just want to focus on the vice president's work.
Yep.
And maybe that's what they've been trying to do over the past year. The same with Kenny Omega. This is just me all thinking out loud because I still think the Bucks should have come in, won the tag team tournament, and been the tag team champions for at least a year.
100%.
And I understand the idea that you have to familiarize yourself with the American audience. That's what I think Kenny Omega has been doing. And that was not my thought. That was Justin Barrasso of Sports Illustrated's thought when I talked to him 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
Was that Kenny wanted to familiarize the American viewing audience with him, and now it's full bore. Here comes the cleaner, and he's gonna go on a run as the AEW champion. So my hope is that the Young Bucks aren't frustrated with being VIPs. They're not unhappy, and that they are going to win the tag team titles and go on a run as what the internet keeps telling me is the best tag team in the world.
Yeah, and that's, again, people, they've been on the Young Bucks for such a long time, but if the internet is saying that and so forth, then why has AEW not given them the titles where they should be the best tag team in the world? And they've promoted their tag team division as a big part of this promotion and so forth. And I'm with you. They should have been the inaugural tag team champs, just like with Jericho as the inaugural AEW champion. And it just would have made perfect sense right there. But if they've gone this far without them, I can't see them winning them right now. Not next week at the Full Gear. I'm going to stick with FTR on this one. And then the Young Bucks will have something taken out of their whatever stipulation that they can challenge, and it's going to happen. It'll work in their favor.
Mike, what other match are you looking forward to?
So I'm actually excited for Cody and Darby Allin for the TNT Championship. Now, I know this past week they had that Lumberjack match on Dynamite. By the way, I am out on Lumberjack matches, Jimmy. I think it's a waste. It's totally antiquated. But the bottom line here, Cody and Darby Allin here. And I think this is a big spot for Darby Allin, Jimmy. And I think that Darby Allin will pull off the win over Cody Rhodes. And I think this is where Cody or Arn Anderson, they're going to make that total. You know, he's going to go on his own. That's it. Cody's going to go on his own. He's going to go heel. Something's going to interfere. And Darby Allin is going to pull this one off. He needs a title more than Cody needs a TNT championship. Cody doesn't need the TNT title. You know, we talk about him. You mentioned him possibly getting that world title shot again. I think that's totally in the cards, even though that stipulation is there for him not to have that. But it's totally in the cards for him to go back up to that main event level there. And, yeah, it's great that he's in this spot for Darby Allin. Darby's been a loyal AEW guy. He's been one of the staples of AEW since they started a little over a year ago now. And I think this is a perfect scenario for Darby Allin to get to that next level for him. He's a high-flying guy. He's very exciting to watch. Dangerous maneuvers, don't get me wrong. But I think this is going to be a shocker that Darby Allin is your new TNT champion.
So I'm not against Darby Allin being the TNT champion. I agree with you that Cody doesn't need it. I think that Cody's best stories have been when there's been emotional investments in them. I do think, to your point about the Lumberjack match,
yep,
I think the Lumberjack match was put in there as a distraction so that Arn Anderson could cheat and help Cody beat Orange Cassidy this past week on Dynamite. I think that's why it was there. Because I think that you're starting to see the subtle turn of Cody. And I kind of wish that he had kept the dark hair. Yep. Because I think that would be a little bit more symbolic instead of the white hair and the white knights, but that's all color scheme and that's all overthinking details like that, which they kind of do. I'm not really a Darby Allin guy. And the reason why is because I think if memory serves, he had a great match with, I know he had a great match with Cody on one of the TNT shows. But I think he had a, did he have a match with Jericho?
I think
for the
early,
title.
Yeah, I think early, I want to say,
I think it was, November. I remember he had two big time good matches. And I want
a year ago.
I want to say it was, okay.
Yeah, October 21, 2009. Sorry, against Jericho. There you go.
Okay. So he has the match with Cody, which was good. He has the match with Jericho, which was good. And then I saw him at a Northeast Wrestling show have a clunker with somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So it tells me that he's not as good a worker as I think we thought he was, or it was just a Styles Clash on that night. But I'm just, Darby's a unique character.
Yes.
Which I like, but I don't see him as a singles promotion champion yet. I think he'll have his day, but I don't think that day should be Saturday night. I would pick Cody to win this. I would pick Cody to cheat to win this. Hmm. And then wherever Cody's going next is wherever Cody's going next.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like the idea that maybe his brother gets involved, but they don't really like his brother pulls him aside and goes, Cody, what are you doing? Why are you cheating like this? And Cody goes, oh, I'm not cheating. And meanwhile, it's clear as day on tape that Arn Anderson is cheating for him or Brandy is cheating for him.
Right.
And then they could maybe do something with that and, you know, maybe recapture that emotion, but you need crowds and we don't know when they're getting crowds back and all that stuff, but they're still doing continuous storylines.
Yep.
So I think Cody retains.
Okay.
Here.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and just, I know we're, you're going to do one more match for the full gear, but I just think, like, just talking about this right now already and coming off that clunker of a pay-per-view back in Labor Day weekend.
Humidity, Mike. It was the humidity.
Oh, God. I hate how people excuse that. It wasn't their fault. It was the humidity. I know. It's a worst excuse in the world. I'm looking forward to this. I think we're in for a big rebound here for AEW on the full gear coming up the first weekend of November.
So there are two other matches that I'm interested in. Well, actually, yep. there's one other match that I'm interested in, Mike, and the other ones that we haven't talked about, I have questions about.
Okay.
So Paige and Omega, I think, should be wonderful. It should be a beautiful matchup. The winner of this match receives a future AEW World Championship match. Mm-hmm. This to me is all about Kenny Omega and can he deliver in the big single spot on the US stage? So that match, I've been disappointed in Adam Page, but it leads me to two questions.
Yep.
What am I missing about Adam Page? Why have I not connected with him? Why do I think that he's been a bust of a prospect? Why do I think he's overrated?
Well, he's in a big spot there with Omega with the name, of course. But Paige, yeah, name a match for Adam Paige that stands out like right now.
So he disappointed me in his match for the AEW Championship against Chris Jericho.
Yep. Okay. There you go. But does that stand out as a disappointment? It's not a good thing, though.
The tag team match that they had with the Young Bucks back in February that we referenced earlier was a good match.
Yep.
You know, one of the best tag team matches of all time.
But how about an individual?
To me, like that, he hasn't had, to me, that standout singles match.
Exactly.
In AEW.
Yep.
I mean, the best match, do you know the best match that Adam Page has? Mike, do you know the best match that Adam Page has participated in that you and I have both seen live?
Was it in Lowell?
It was not. No. Right idea, though. Right promotion.
New Orleans. Okay.
It was New Orleans.
Yeah, okay.
It was against Ibushi.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah. I forgot about
that.
So
is that Adam Page or is that Ibushi?
I'd have to say Ibushi. He's the guy making him look good, right?
So that's my question. That's my question to the audience, Boston. What do you think about that? what am I missing from Adam Page? Why am I not?
But on the flip side, will Kenny Omega be able to carry the match here and make Page look like trying to make him as good as he can in a one-on-one?
Okay. I think Kenny Omega is one of the best singles competitors in the world, and he just hasn't had that big time showcase. He hasn't had that run where he's drawing his champion in the States. Like I'm a huge Kenny Omega honk and defender and all that stuff. And
he's been kind of
I think he's going to have this blowaway singles match.
Yeah.
He should, but like, I just feel like there's something missing from the Adam Page package. And I'm starting to think that Adam Page is just a bust of a prospect.
Yeah, and for one-on-one, at least, you know, the tag team, that match there earlier this year with the Young Bucks was fantastic. But yeah, this is a huge spot for him here in this scenario. And like you said, with the stipulation of the winner getting the title shot there, this is probably the biggest match of his career when it's all said and done.
Adam Page's biggest match of his career would have been going against Jericho for the AEW title.
Well, in this scenario here, to get a win and then possibly get another world title shot, it's a big one.
Moxley, so this transitions me to John Moxley and Eddie Kingston, right?
Yeah.
Moxley retains. He makes Eddie Kingston quit.
I think that's everyone.
The promos have been wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
But what am I missing, Mike Riley, in this John Moxley world title run? Because you're a Moxley guy, right?
You
wanted Moxley to have the title at this time last year.
Yep. Yep. I like John Moxley.
So tell me why this title run has been great.
He's been, I don't think it has. I think he's been kind of a disappointment in a way. I thought he would have been, again, no crowd and the audience a big part, but that's no excuse for him here. And I think that that whole appeal of him coming from the WWE and off that podcast there talking about everything, people knew about him. So he had that momentum there with everyone behind him and so forth. Doesn't really have that right now. He's a good champion, but he hasn't lived up, I think, to where the standard should be for John Moxley as the second AEW champion in promotion history right there with a big victory over Chris Jericho. So to have him take that title off him, he has tried to carry the torch as best possible, but it's not as good as it could have been. I can't see Eddie Kingston winning this one. If he does, that's another shocker. Moxley should retain here, and maybe he gets the title off of him. They take the title off of him at the next pay-per-view. Or I'd be shocked if it happened on a Dynamite. This might be the last title win for John Moxley before they change situations, because it's not really connecting with everyone. I don't think so, at least to you.
I think Kenny Omega gets the belt off of John Moxley, and whether that's December, whether that's January, whether that's the February pay-per-view.
Yep.
Kenny Omega's coming for that ass. He's coming for revenge from last year's Full Gear where Moxley beat him. And Omega's getting that title from John Moxley, in my opinion. I don't think Eddie Kingston has a chance in hell of winning this match, especially with it being an I Quit stipulation.
Yeah, that's a Moxley specialty.
Like, and Eddie Kingston's good. I'm glad he's good promo-wise. He's got an unorthodox in-ring style.
Yep.
And I'm glad that he's getting this opportunity. I wanted him to win the Battle Royal thing from a few weeks ago at the last pay-per-view. But they gave it to Lance Archer, which was kind of a waste. But I, the formula of Hulk Hogan, here's King Kong Bundy, Big John Studd, Ravishing Rick Rude, Paul Orndorff, Rowdy Piper.
Right.
And I think that's been the formula for John Moxley, is he's in the ring, with the exception of MJF and probably one or two other people, with people who are bigger than him and clear villains. I haven't been interested in that formula during this run for John Moxley as world champion. So that's why I'm asking the question. You, Mike Riley, number one John Moxley fan,
that's strong,
defend his title run.
I can't. I told you. I'm having a hard time doing it. I wanted him as a champion this time last year because of those reasons you just said right there. Coming in as that big baby face, that was a great opportunity. I don't think he's really – you got to remember, he also took that time off too. Let's remember that earlier in the year here, and that was a big drop right there too without him around. So – obviously for the COVID situations, but it's been a tough connection with the fans. So I'm having a hard time defending it. I really am. Last year at this time, all in, but I can't really look at him as a tremendous champion in AEW history right now. It's going to take a long time.
So Mike Riley, you have to acknowledge me as your tribal chief. You have to acknowledge me as the head of the table. Cause it's yet another thing I've been right about, but I want to transition to
decent
the what I think is still the most interesting story in pro wrestling on any show is the Roman Reigns Jey Uso thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so on SmackDown, Jey Uso beats Daniel Bryan and is now on the SmackDown Survivor Series team. But that's not the story here. In a really good match of Uso versus Daniel Bryan, because they're both tremendous competitors and they can't have a bad match. Yep. And if you want a good tag team match, look at Money in the Bank and Hartford from 2019. It's a pre-show match. It's the Usos against Bryan and Eric Rowan, because they were intellectuals saving the world. That's one of the more underappreciated matches of 2019, where there were so many great ones, but I digress. Post-match, Jey Uso admits that Roman Reigns is the leader and sits at the head of the table and does an extra post-match beatdown on Bryan, including doing the Uso splash on Bryan through the table, through the outside announce table. So this is where we all thought it was going, is Roman Reigns is going to collect everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that while going from the beginning of the show to the end of the show, there was really no logical self-explanatory reason for Jey to join with Roman, other than it's just, it was time to close it all. And we all knew where this was going.
Right.
The fact that Roman Reigns is now collecting a stable is good for business.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be Jey Uso, it'll be Jimmy Uso, and it'll be like, let's see who else is coming to sit at the table with Roman Reigns. And this kind of leads me to what I will call the email of the day, which isn't sponsored, but I'd be happy to have it sponsored.
Sure.
And it comes from Amir in Waltham. He writes, deep dive on the tribal chief. The main tribal chief in reality died in the Samoan family. This meant that it's between Afa, Sika, and Rikishi to be tribal chief after the passing. Typically, it's the oldest son, but it may have been in dispute. If Afa and Sika acknowledged Roman as tribal chief, the last holdout would be Rikishi. With Rikishi's children acknowledging Roman as the tribal chief, he, in theory, has overwhelming endorsement now to be the actual tribal chief in storyline. It would be an uphill battle for Rikishi to claim that title if Rikishi's own children have acknowledged Roman Reigns. I thought that was a fabulous email. What a great dive into the
story. I didn't think about that. Yep, I didn't think about that with Rikishi. That's a great point by Amir there. And yeah, I mean, obviously, he is the father of the Usos right there. So perfect situation to bring him back into the fold. And, you know, I'm going to go off of this again, what I said last week, Jimmy. And it's so good in this scenario, what WWE is doing without a live crowd there. They're able to do this, because I think if you did have a live crowd, you'd be getting more boos. You can control their own audience here. It's a excellent scenario for them to do this here with the talking and the way they're telling everyone here the whole situation of the tribal and who's the tribal chief and who's sitting at his table and joining the stable in general. So this is a great thing they're doing and figuring it out during a pandemic situation.
Mike, I'm going to clean up your point a little bit.
Yep.
One of maybe the only great thing about not having a crowd here is you can hear the actual trash talking.
Yes.
Between Roman Reigns and Jey Uso. And that has made the story much more personal. One of the great things about Kevin Owens, and we've witnessed this by sitting ringside live,
yep,
is he consistently runs his mouth at house shows. He consistently runs his mouth when he's in the ring. And so with the fact that there are no live fans, they can crank those microphones up, they being WWE production teams. And you can hear Roman Reigns say things to Jey Uso.
So
good. You
can
hear Jey Uso say things back to Roman Reigns. So it's creating, it's pro wrestling, but it's giving that personal feel to the competitive nature of a story that most people can relate to. Family battles, power trips, egos, simple things like that.
Yep.
I'm an only child. I'm a spoiled, rotten only child.
Yes, you are.
So I can't relate to family bickering like you can.
Oh, yeah. I can tell you stories left and right. And this is just, yeah, again, like you said, we saw it at Hell in a Cell. We saw, you know, Jay and Jimmy crying, and even on SmackDown, crying right here. So it's an excellent way they're doing this here, because essentially it's not an arena they're in. They're in a studio when you think about it.
Yep. And that studio that they created is a thing of beauty. It adds so much depth to their production. They can manipulate it how they need to. And just the personal nature, there couldn't have been a better start to this Roman Reigns Universal Championship run than with somebody who can sell, and they both can sell for each other. And it's not about ego. It's about getting the story across, because at the end of the day, Mike, it's all about money. It's all about TV ratings, and SmackDown's ratings from Friday night were really strong.
And you know what? If Rikishi comes in, that is the excellent studio situation for him right there too. So bring him in. I like Amir's email. Good job.
And just to wrap up the point on Jey Uso, Roman Reigns, when Brian comes back, he's going to put over Roman Reigns. And I look forward to the Daniel Bryan, Roman Reigns matches, because I think the last time that they were in a high profile match was, it would have been, I think it would have been before WrestleMania in San Francisco.
Fastlane 2015. That's correct.
And I remember that being a tremendous match that the crowd rejected because they wanted Bryan in the main event of WrestleMania. And they ended up with Roman Reigns.
And that was the number one contender match, yes. And then Daniel Bryan got the Intercontinental title at the ladder match there.
The ladder match in San Francisco, and then he got concussed again, and that was the end of that.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
That's at least what I remember their last big profile match. If there was one in between there, forgive me.
Yeah, thank you.
The other thing from SmackDown that has been really good, because SmackDown has been the best wrestling show in a long time.
100%.
Since probably right around before SummerSlam, it's Sasha Banks and Bayley. They're doing a rematch on SmackDown this Friday night. And I liked how in Bayley's promo, she brought up the fact that Banks has not been able to successfully defend her title, and that she held the title for about 500 days. And they emphasized that on Talking Smack. But let's take a look at Sasha Banks' championship reigns. Mm-hmm. She beat Charlotte July 25th of that year. This is after WrestleMania 32. Drops it back to Charlotte 27 days later. October 3rd, beats Charlotte and then drops it back to her 27 days later at Hell in a Cell in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Banks reclaims the title November 28th, taps out Charlotte in a Falls Count Anywhere match in Charlotte, North Carolina, drops it back to Charlotte 20 days later at the December pay-per-view. Now, let's fast forward to SummerSlam 2017. Sasha Banks upsets Alexa Bliss and then drops it back to Bliss 8 days later on Raw. Now, we fast forward to July 20th, 2020. Mm-hmm. Sasha Banks beats Asuka by countout on Raw. And then the Banks versus Asuka rematch at SummerSlam 34 days later. And yes, you guessed it, Sasha Banks lost.
Mm-hmm.
In total, 5 Raw title wins, 116 days total as champion. Mike Riley, that is an average of 23 days as champion.
So if we're doing this correctly here, in this situation, it's been a week since Hell in a Cell. That would be less than 14 days if Bayley is to take the title off of Sasha Banks, right?
It wouldn't even be her least long, her shortest run as champion, because that is 8 days, which if she survives tomorrow.
Yeah, right. That's true. Yeah. I didn't think about that.
If she survives tomorrow as SmackDown Women's Champion, she'll get to 9. Well, it depends on when people are listening to this, but
yeah,
we're taping on Sunday, so she'll be at 7 days.
Right.
So if she still has it on Tuesday, she's safe. So don't defend it on Raw, whatever you do, because it might be screwed over. But I don't see Bayley getting the SmackDown Women's title back. But this is kind of to a bigger point, and I know you want to detail this matchup in a second, but I'm not sure that WWE is going to feature Sasha Banks versus Asuka on Survivor Series. It's just a feeling, but I believe Charlotte is due back soon. And the last few years, there's been last minute Survivor Series card changes.
Mm-hmm.
You'll remember AJ Styles beats Jinder Mahal to become the new WWE champion. And that Survivor Series match goes from Jinder Mahal versus Brock Lesnar to AJ Styles against Brock Lesnar. A year later, Daniel Bryan turns heel and upsets AJ Styles, changing the men's match again.
Yep.
From AJ Styles versus Brock Lesnar to Daniel Bryan versus Brock Lesnar. And then you had Charlotte, who upset Natalya on the SmackDown before Survivor Series, changing that women's match from Natalya versus Alexa Bliss to Charlotte versus Alexa Bliss.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a long way of getting to, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Sasha Banks versus Charlotte at Survivor Series.
Well,
we haven't seen it in a long time.
Yep.
And I don't feel like that they're going to do Banks versus Asuka again. And I don't feel like they're going to do Bayley versus Asuka again. It's just kind of a feeling. And I tend to believe that Charlotte's coming back soon.
So another thing too, with Asuka and Sasha Banks right there, that's a question to be asked. Who needs the win more if they're going to go in that particular matchup there? Who needs the win more, Sasha Banks or Asuka? Because Asuka has, you know, she's in that spot right there for Raw where she's dropped a lot of big spots right there, and she's in that prominent position right now with the Raw Women's title, where you just detailed everything and Sasha losing the championship with, on an average of, what was it, 24 days? Is that what you said? 23 days, yeah. So, I mean, it would make sense right there with the Survivor Series. Yes, that is just 20 days after Hell in a Cell, which was just last week. So I think you see Sasha Banks retain against Asuka, and all of a sudden, right afterwards, Charlotte's music hits, comes out, and challenges Sasha Banks right there, and then maybe do a spot with a quick, you know, a challenge on the spot there, or they promote it for the following month.
The other thing that I wouldn't sleep on either is they let Alexa Bliss in.
And yeah,
they have Alexa Bliss, who's possessed by the Fiend,
and have her, yeah, the manager,
and have her knock off Asuka.
Yep.
And then you get Sasha Banks versus Alexa Bliss, which is a match we haven't seen in a long time.
Yep.
I don't feel like they're going to redo a match from the summer. I guess that's kind of my bigger point.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you know what? And there's so much possibility because Charlotte, she's been teasing on social media her return. In you know, I know you talked about it last week. They're holding that SmackDown Women's title. Look at everywhere on Twitter every day. She's putting something up new, and a lot of them are with the championship belts or coming out from the behind the curtain there with the crowd, and she's coming sooner than later.
Yeah, that's kind of what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
You had a thought on Sasha and Bayley and their matchup on Friday Night SmackDown coming up.
I mean, just, you know, it is right here, what, less than 14 days after the Hell in the Cell. So I just think that, you know, WWE could surprise us. I think Sasha's going to retain here. I think she has to, like, for the points I just said moments ago there, if she is to go up against Asuka at the Survivor Series. But Bayley here, you know, losing to her former best friend. And, you know, I was just a little surprised. I shouldn't say this. I wasn't surprised they're having the rematch so soon. But I think this might be the last time in a while that you see these two fight one-on-one, especially if Sasha is going to, you know, have that defense against Asuka, and then maybe Charlotte with the return there. You see those two go at it. They'll have a feud at WrestleMania, I think, Sasha and Bayley. So this will probably be the last time you see them go one-on-one for a while.
I feel like Sasha and Bayley are going to have a TLC match in December. Mm-hmm. And I think that main event's the pay-per-view in December.
Okay.
And then they don't touch for a while. And I feel like Friday night is going to be a non-finish. That's just a feeling. Yeah, they're not going to give you a title switch. They're not going to give you a finish.
Yep.
And then they can continue smack talking each other after Survivor Series, and then it's Bayley's last chance for a while, and that's a TLC match with Sasha and Bayley.
Yeah, we could have a I could see a DQ there totally, and that'll be it, one more. But yeah, it's the end of the line for these two, because it was such a good storyline going into the Hell in the Cell. And I don't know, Jimmy, I'm of the kind where if it's that good, just kind of let it be. But you know what? That's how WWE's model is. They just keep going with a particular feud over and over sometimes.
Mike, I know you have a few things that you want to touch on before we wrap up. I did want to make note of a what I would call a match to watch this week.
Yeah.
And it's Walter and Dragunov. I hope I'm pronouncing that. I know I'm not.
UK.
They fought for the NXT UK championship, and they just beat the hell out of each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they had welts on their body. The chops were vicious, and especially in that environment where there's no sound. Just a about as hard hitting a match as I've seen in a while.
Mm-hmm.
So as you know, Mike, I'm not a Walter guy, because I'm still bitter that he beat Pete Dunne right in front of my face sitting ringside at that NXT show in Brooklyn.
Yep.
A few years ago. Wow. So it,
I know you're
it feels like a long time ago.
Feels like an eternity. But,
man, that was a hard hitting match, and good for them for doing it.
I'll have to check that out this week. And by the way, speaking of Pete Dunne, nice return for him at Halloween Havoc NXT. He looks great too, by the way. I mean, I know he's been on the shelf and everything, but wow, he's in phenomenal shape right now. Looks great. So good to have him back in the fold here. And you watched Halloween Havoc, Jimmy, right?
Yeah, I was happy to see Johnny Gargano win the North American title. I was upset that Candice LeRae did not capture the NXT Women's Championship. I will say this, and I know you have some points on Halloween Havoc. Io Shirai might be the best booked babyface in all the WWE.
Okay, I was that.
She has done spectacular things as the champion. She looks strong. She doesn't feel like she's ever compromised as a babyface.
Okay.
So there's no, so in other words,
yep,
there are these moments where your babyfaces look like idiots for doing things.
Yep, yep.
I haven't felt that way at all with Io Shirai ever since she got the title.
Hell of a competitor. Awesome. Yeah. And she is in that prime position right there, and she's owned it. She's really owned it. So yeah, I could see her, you know what? After WrestleMania, making the move up to Raw or SmackDown, maybe.
Well, tell me if Rhea Ripley's going to be on Raw or SmackDown.
Well, I think she
got. How's the girl doing?
Well, listen, she got a little too hot there, I think, at WrestleMania. And that was a great spot for her to be there with Charlotte. And I thought that she should have had a title on her sooner than later after that loss to Charlotte. But that was a really good match there with Raquel Gonzalez. By the way, Raquel Gonzalez, wow, that is something to keep an eye on, too. She is the whole women's division in all of WWE is stacked right now. And Rhea Ripley and Raquel Gonzalez, that was a really good match at Halloween Havoc there. So I could see her getting the push there at some point to be for the women's title. Gonzalez, a big girl. But Ripley, you know what? As far as her to get back to a Raw or SmackDown standpoint, probably looking at a Royal Rumble, maybe have to win the Rumble to get into there.
Rhea Ripley winning the Royal Rumble match.
Never say never. Never say never. Coming off the loss there to Charlotte, right? And then I know she had some issues with Australia with the COVID and everything. She was kind of off the television for a while. But hey, never say never, because we're coming up here. We're going to start planning ahead to see who could be a contender for the women's championships.
Depending on where we are in COVID.
Yep.
I don't know that NXT is going to be involved in the Rumble.
Okay.
Because they're not involved in Survivor Series right now. Well, and I think that's because of COVID.
Yeah, but.
And by the way, that's not because Vince McMahon is disinterested in the brand.
Yep.
There was a story out there
I saw that.
I know, because the WrestleCast 985 account tweeted it, and then I got some messages from people who were like, "Get off the dirt sheets," because that's not true at all. Vince is trying to do what he can within the realms of his product of making NXT good, but he's got SmackDown, he's got Raw, so he's trusting in Triple H and Triple H's staff to create good, compelling stuff that is going to beat AEW. But remember, AEW is beating WWE's third brand.
Yeah.
And the more I feel about it is that it is still about rebuilding and developing stars, as opposed to, like, Balor's the champion, Balor's the draw. Gargano is now the champion because Damian Priest had a short run, and maybe Damian Priest gets it back, but they realize they made a mistake and they should have it on Gargano.
Yeah, but
they should have had Gargano win that ladder match back when, because I remember mocking it, being like, what's this person and what's this person? Who's this person? Like, where's the star power here?
So, I mean, a lot of people, I know a few people that listen to the podcast here weekly, hardcore NXT fans since day one, and they would love to see NXT go back to the 1 hour on the network, no more competition with AEW, and I just think that they want their 1 hour there every week, and that's it. Too much. They got a little too big on the brand extension or whatnot, whatever you want to say, especially going ahead with the quote unquote major promotion of AEW. Tough spot right there. So for that particular dirt sheet to have that report there of Vince not being happy with it, and for NXT to not be involved with this year's Survivor Series, I mean, it's a little disappointing because last year was so good, Survivor Series, but I think Survivor Series is at a point where it's an antiquated pay-per-view, because years ago, you were able to put all these guys in a 4-on-4 matchup, or 5-on-5-1, whatever, and now it's like you see them every week. It's just a forced situation, and I know you have your inter-brand matches and so forth, but it's not the same as it was years ago. It's the second oldest pay-per-view. I get it. They want to continue with that tradition, and if there's no stipulation on the line for it, it's just an antiquated old pay-per-view.
Well, they transitioned it to essentially bragging rights.
Yeah,
they took the bragging rights pay-per-view and made it Survivor Series, which I think is a good thing. Where there's the problem is that they had this wild card thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're telling me that the only time that the brands really cross is four times a year, maybe five times a year, and what I mean by that is, WrestleMania, Rumble, Survivor Series, SummerSlam, Money in the Bank. If those are the only time that there's cross-brand pollination, like, that's good. That's okay. I'm perfectly fine with that. I like getting the champion. Like, I'm interested in Roman versus Randy Orton. I'm interested in Sami Zayn versus Bobby Lashley. I'm interested in what they do with the teams for Survivor Series. I love, guilty pleasures of mine are going back and watching some Survivor Series 87 and 88 with the tag team matches.
Oh yeah.
But that's me. That's my childhood. Those are,
yeah, no, it was awesome
times, and those are the good memories. So, like, I like seeing the matches of Survival. But
Survivor Series is all just like one on one now, and you just have that one or two, 4-on-4, 5-on-5.
Because this goes to a bigger point about the business and how the business has changed.
I get it.
The reason why Survivor Series was teams of five striving to survive was to give you teasers for a match that you're going to see at a house show.
Right.
Because the live event business was what your big money driver was.
Exactly.
And now where it's a TV business, and this is why you're seeing Sasha Banks versus Bayley for the women's championship two times on SmackDown in the last 4 weeks, is because SmackDown brings in the most revenue, the most money that WWE can do.
Right.
So they're not going to give you a Universal Championship defense every week. They might give you one once a month, but generally speaking, they have to give you some of the milk, but you can't get all the milk without buying the cow.
No, I get it. I get it. But it's just like, again, I think they're at a point where you talk about the bragging rights, they had that and everything, and for the fact that NXT won the Survivor Series last year, like, that's great and all, but what did they get? just to brag? No, give me more. You know, I know you brought up the point to have that 30th entrant in the Royal Rumble or something like that, or just give me some sort of stipulation there where it means something to be a Survivor Series winner. And if you're going to put your brand there, make it all special like that, all Raw one or SmackDown, then tell us why it's important to win the Survivor Series. Do it.
So whoever wins the Survivor Series should get the 30th spot in the Rumble.
Something like that. Yeah.
But the point of last year's Survivor Series with NXT being involved was, hey, look at what we're doing on Wednesday night.
Yeah, as a showcase.
Look at Adam Cole beating Daniel Bryan. Look at Tommaso Ciampa beating The Miz. Look at Shayna Baszler choking out Bayley. Look at all these positive things. Look at Rhea Ripley's weekend.
Yep, huge.
And that was the main goal of Survivor Series last year, was to establish that NXT is on equal footing of Raw and SmackDown. And whether that's the actual... I go to, if NXT is really on equal footing with Raw and SmackDown, then Brock Lesnar shows up the Wednesday before Survivor Series when the doors are open and not AJ Styles in the club. And granted, right. Becky Lynch showed up there and had a match with Rhea Ripley, and yep. It had a non-finish, but Rhea Ripley's weekend was, it was winning War Games.
Yep.
It was being the winner of the Survivor Series match. Pinning Charlotte, and mm-hmm. It was having a match with Becky Lynch. That's a really good weekend. That's a really strong weekend for Rhea Ripley.
Yep.
And it put a lot of eyes on her.
Yep.
And that's
huge.
And it led to the match with Charlotte and all that stuff. And since that match with Charlotte, you know, I mean, look out, her career's dropping like a rock.
No, I wouldn't go that far. I don't think so. It's only going to be up and bigger and better than what
I
we
mean,
saw.
Mike,
get ready.
She's 24. The clock is ticking on her.
It's not ticking on her, but you know what? She's going to be even better. Get ready. I can't wait for her to propel. I love Rhea Ripley. Love her. It's going to be great. Yeah.
So I know you had a few things, including, I know you had a few things you wanted to comment on, including Sting. And the WWE pulling his merchandise from shop.
Just real quick on that. I thought it was interesting, but you know, we've seen this happen before with legends getting their shop stuff pulled and so forth. It sounds like Sting's contract was up this week. Doesn't mean it will not be renewed, but, I don't know. Maybe it's just, he's getting that treatment again of WrestleMania 31, where he was absolutely buried by Triple H and so forth. But I'm going to say this though, Jimmy. Like I said, it doesn't mean Sting is necessarily done. I'm not ruling out another Sting match down the line. Whether that be in AEW or if Sting has one more match in WWE in the
cinematic.
Thank you. Gosh, I couldn't get it out. Cinematic match.
Mike, you're the voice guy. You're the show up and talk guy.
I'm tired. That's why. I'm exhausted. My brain is not functioning 100%. I think that we may get a cinematic match with Sting and finally The Undertaker. And I know Jimmy's like, oh, I can feel it right now in his response. I would not be surprised if you get that one more time, for the first time, and that might be it for Stinger. At WrestleMania right there.
Sting versus The Undertaker cinematic should happen at the 30-year anniversary of Survivor Series.
That would be awesome.
That should be a match that happens in however long. But I'd watch that because it's a cinematic thing, and I think that they do wonderful things.
Yes.
But, yeah, I still think that Undertaker should be speared to hell by Roman Reigns.
You're
like
nuts.
30
you're,
times.
You're crazy. You're crazy. No.
But so Sting is disgruntled and he's going to AEW. Does that sum up your take?
I wouldn't be surprised. Yes. Okay. I wouldn't be surprised. You know what? We've seen Tony Khan scoop up guys that were, you know, hey, all PO'd about WWE and so forth, or just shown the door. So I would not be shocked if he goes to AEW. Yes.
I like Miro's video game gimmick. Not really. Speaking of Twitch accounts and video games, you had a thought on the WWE pulling Twitch accounts on talent.
Well, you saw Paige, her response to this, right? You saw what she had to say, because she just loved being on Twitch. She's going crazy during the whole pandemic here, and she said she was loyal to the WWE and so forth. Felt very betrayed to have Twitch pulled for her personal interaction with fans and so forth. Also said, you know, we're not hurting anyone and everything. It's just kind of interesting here. I think they're trying to, I get it. They don't want these guys to break character so much. It's very difficult to do that in the year 2020 as we're going into 2021 now. But you know what? I'll say this, though, with the Twitch and AJ Styles' other mixer he had last year, he teased about him having a match with The Undertaker at WrestleMania. And sure as heck, that did come to fruition right there. So things like this, where the wrestlers and the talent have those personal, you know, interaction with fans and telling you stuff, you can pick up on things if you don't have that insight with others behind the scenes right there. I think that hurts the fans that want to get more to know for what could happen there. And it's a little disappointing that they kind of have to have this little gag order stranglehold on them not to be able to do that. And we saw what happened with Big E too, with the was it the TikTok or the cameo, right? Cameo. Yeah. So, you know, things like that, they really are trying to get a hold on this.
Big E made $120,000 just doing cameos.
That's amazing.
Right? That's amazing. And so cameo takes 25%.
Mm-hmm.
So 75% of that is still a nice chunk of change, right? Before taxes.
Yep.
So I understand why WWE is taking control of this revenue stream for their talents. I understand that because they think that they are the reason why these talents have this fan following. So I understand it. I disagree with it, but I understand it because I have a contract with the Sports Hub. So yep. If I do something that is quote unquote third party,
yep,
I have to have it approved by my managers.
Yes.
So I completely understand where WWE is coming from, but they should be able to work out a deal where the wrestler gets extra compensation for doing it and make up that lost income of them doing it on their own.
Right.
And I think that's where there needs to be a conversation with Vince McMahon and these talents about it, because it's extra revenue. But I think, and you're seeing it now with these virtual meet and greets, is WWE has a price. It's $125.
Yep.
For a 2-minute meet and greet over video chat. And then you can get add-ons, you can get a belt, you can get an 8x10, you can get a chair that are signed and personalized for extra money. So say I wanted so Xavier Woods is doing one this week.
Yep.
So it's $125 for the video chat. And then if you want an autographed 8x10, I think it's an extra like $40.
Yep.
If you want, like Xavier doesn't have the belt, but say you wanted a belt, it's an extra $500 plus shipping. So you're paying essentially the same for your meet and greets if right. You were to go to WWE Access.
Right.
Except you get to actually keep the meet and greet. And no, you don't get a hug from Xavier Woods.
Right.
But you get to have a 2-minute conversation that then you get to keep and put out on social media and brag about if you want to.
Yep.
And you potentially get a belt that is personalized, which, you know, we're both belt collectors now.
Yep.
And so that's a really cool idea, and that's the experience. But I think what WWE doesn't understand is, and maybe they don't want to understand, is because it affects how fans react, is when wrestlers get that personal connection with a fan, it doesn't matter what their story is. That fan is going to be a fan of that wrestler until they retire. And probably beyond retirement, because they have that personal connection. So I will just use my own story, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Charlotte has been super nice to me over the past 5 years, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so she can be on the good side of the coin. She can be on the bad side of the coin. I am going to cheer her. I am going to support her. I am going to get her merchandise, whatever it is.
Yep.
That is, I am a fan of Charlotte until she hangs them up and maybe she'll train my daughter to be a wrestler. Who knows?
Yep.
But that is the type of experience that the WWE wants its fans to have, but at the same time doesn't want their fans to have, because it compromises their stories and how they want the audience to react to their stories. So it's kind of a double-edged sword there, right? And that is why I think that they are pulling Twitch, is because they want those personal experiences on their time, not on somebody else's time, where they can be making money that they think that money should be filtered through WWE and then distributed to. Well, I said a lot there.
Well, no, you're right about that. They want it on their time. They want full control. It's just interesting to see Paige's comments on it and so forth. But when you do get the, like I said, the insight of things that the fan may not be able to get ever again, especially if it's under WWE's watch, then it's very hard to break the character for them at this day and age right here. So to your point there of meeting some of the talent, I mean, exactly, Charlotte's a prime example. Even that time with the New Day, Jimmy, met them at that same event there with Charlotte. I've been hooked on them since. Perfect example right there. Love it. And Roman Reigns, listen, he lost to The Undertaker. He beat The Undertaker at WrestleMania 33. That crushed me. But Roman Reigns took a selfie with me, so I'm all for the guy. I will support him to the day I die. So there you go, right?
You're welcome for
you gave me the advice.
Suggesting that to you, but for Roman recognizing I was sitting front row and coming over to me in the same way that John Cena did that night in Worcester, in the same way that Matt Hardy did that night in Worcester. Do I need to go on or should I stop?
Is your middle name the Topper? You just try to top everything. I get it.
I give you facts, and I give you that. I can't even keep doing it.
Enough. Time. That's enough.
I call it like I see it, Mike Riley.
I like it.
That's
good stuff. But hey, it's something I will never ever forget. So thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Yes. Hey, by the way,
Jimmy, go ahead.
For people that haven't,
I was
done
about
it
to
yet,
give the go home cue.
Yeah, just real quick, for people that haven't done it yet, I know you can just close it after this. Go out there and vote on Tuesday if you haven't done it yet.
Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 985thesportshub.com and on the 985 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. And in closing, as a happy birthday to Bobby the Brain Heenan, always remember that a friend in need is a pest.
Looking for hope? House of Possibilities offers children and adults with disabilities a path to greater independence. From social to recreational programs to overnight respite and career and community access opportunities, House of Possibilities is changing the way people see disabilities and their program participants see themselves. Visit houseofpossibilities.org to learn more or to support their work. That's houseofpossibilities.org. House of Possibilities. See what belonging can do.
Roto-Rooter. Plumbing problem? Leaks are no match for DIY duct tape. And a wrench. And a towel, more duct tape, a hammer, this random tube I found in the basement, another bucket, more tape, a little more tape. Perfect.
Maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
Roto-Rooter. The Sports Hub On Demand content is brought to you by Miller Lite. Tip off every Celtics game all season long with a great-tasting ice-cold Miller Lite, the original light beer. Miller Lite, official partner of the 17-time world champion Boston Celtics. When it's game time, it's Miller time, Celtics fans.